This is a road version of SportsLit 101. I'll be back in the studio next week when our guest will be Mark Stevens, author of The Fireballer. That's a novel that poses the question, can a major league pitcher be unhittable? And if so, what would the union in the league do to counter that? It's a fascinating premise for a book and a true page-turner. I look forward to talking to Mark about it on the 31st. My wife and I have taken the long way to Florida to visit my 96-year-old father. Spending time with him reminds me of the great moments and figures in sport that he's seen. Ruth, Garrett, DiMaggio playing for the Yankees, Joe Louis, for example, fighting for the heavyweight crown, and so many more. An accomplished swimmer himself, he raced in an exhibition against the great Johnny Weissmuller. It also reminds me of how many books we've discussed on Downtown that address how sports can be a diversion from the stresses of daily life, if we allow them to be that, sports, and not something more important. No game should be a life or death moment. Sports are not, despite the cliches about epic battles, war. I watch a lot of hockey, including most every Black Bear men's and women's home games in person, as well as taking in an occasional road game. I follow the NHL and PHF closely, not encyclopedically, but I love the game. With neither of my favorite teams, the Rangers or Canadiens, in the playoffs, or the Bruins, whom I follow because Boston Pro Sports are an important part of what is covered on Downtown, I'm now hoping for a Vegas-Florida final. That way, it ensures that either Golden Knight defenseman Ben Hutton or Panther forward Ryan Lomborg gets his name etched on Lord Stanley's Cup. This year, the Toronto Six won the Isabel Cup, the PHF Women's Premier Hockey Federation Women's Championship, and I love seeing former Black Bears forward Teresa Vanasova, only person to be on three Isabel Cup championship teams, having won two with the Pride, and goalie Carly Jackson skating the trophy around the ice. Since I've met Hutton and Lomborg, and know Carly and Teresa well, I feel like I have a little skin in those games. But we are all connected to our favorite sports and our teams in a myriad of ways. We've seen over the course of the last 9+ years that sports can be an extraordinary force for good and personal growth. Carl Subban's book about the way he and his wife raised their three sons not just to be professional hockey players, but also proud, well-educated, and grateful citizens is a moving tale of determination and struggle. We've seen sports as a change agent in dozens of books. And while here in the Deep South, I think of a slew of those books, including Beyond the Black Power Salute, one that details the vilification of Tommy Smith and John Carlos's mild protests at the 1968 Olympics, especially the way they were treated by mainstream American media personalities like Brent Musburger. I've got to admit I was never a fan of his smug delivery or self-important fanboy reporting. And by others whose venom only served to highlight the very inequities and inequalities those athletes were exposing. These are important books, and we'll delve into that more at a later date this summer. But the question for this week is, how do we become die-hard fans? How do we become rabid fans? How do we become obsessed? Every football, bowl, and championship division team recruits in Florida. It has been true on a regular basis that per capita, more Florida players appear on those rosters than players from any other state. Yes, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, California, the other states of the Deep South produce thousands of gifted athletes as well. But the growth of bowl division football teams in Florida is a stand-up-and-take-notice occurrence. Florida, Florida State, and Miami used to be the only top-tier programs. Now, schools like UCF, Florida Atlantic, Florida International, etc., have joined the FBS ranks, meaning more Floridians will be able to play closer to home. Will these other schools cut into the longtime Big Three's fan base? Will former committed Gator or Hurricane fans change allegiances when athletes they know or admire choose to play for UCF or FIU? Only time will tell. When your school moves up to the top division or your city gets a new pro franchise, how does that affect you as a fan? There are many older New Englanders like myself who never became Patriots fans because when their affections were first formed for the local team, if you will, it was the Giants. They were seen on TV and heard on radio throughout most of the region. Western Massachusetts was, especially when the Yankees had a team in Pittsfield, not Red Sox territory. That has all changed. But how are loyalties formed in places like New York, Chicago, L.A., where there are more than one team in a pro sport? Is it family loyalty? How much does peer interaction affect that? How does the military child who may live in 6 or 8 different places while growing up form a bond with a pro or college team? And how much does success matter? I know many devoted UMaine women's basketball fans who also adore the UConn Huskies. When the two meet, a rare occurrence, they dream and root for the upset, but they always root for UConn when it comes down to the national championship when they're in it. When I think about those questions, I also think of my younger son, Zach, and my dear late friend, Rich Nurge. Both grew up along the fault line between Boston and New York fan bases and decided to opt out of that rivalry by choosing teams far away from Connecticut to root for. Rich was a Lakers, Twins, and Washington football fan. Zach chose the Browns and the Cubs. More people might think about doing that along those areas, and there'd be fewer fights and arguments. One of the best books on fan identity is one we loved. It's Nick Hornsby's Fever Pitch. We spoke about it a few years back, and even then it wasn't new. In the Goodreads review of this classic story, which I really liked, which is the story of a rabid Arsenal soccer fan, they note it explores the insanity that can envelop the diehard fan. And insanity does seem at times to be the word. Shows how once a fan had gone down that rabbit hole, all else in their world becomes less important, just like a junkie or a gambling addict. For too many, sports has become as broken and rancorous as our political system. In March, I attended a New York Rangers game at Madison Square Garden, a satisfying victory over a team Ranger fans consider a prime rival, the Pittsburgh Penguins. I had a great time, but I was shocked by the number of well-oiled, jersey-clad 50-year-old men chanting stupid slogans designed to taunt not the players, who could not hear them from where we were sitting, but the out-of-town Penguins fans. Really? This is what going to a game is about, getting loaded and chanting Crosby sucks? Not a big fan of Sid the Kid, but he's a generational player. No, he does not suck. He's a great hockey player. This spring, I had the pleasure to have six UMaine baseball players in my hockey literature class, along with athletes from three other sports. I make it a point to attend games and meets in which my students compete. It seems like a way to respect how hard they work, but also because I enjoy it. In fact, I attend 50-plus UMaine athletic contests a year. Because I love sports literature and because I teach sports literature, I make connections between the contests I attend and the world of writing. The athletes in my class this past semester play baseball, soccer, and run track. They were also fine students. Unless traveling, they were always in class. Their work arrived on time was consistently quite good. But what I realized this semester more than in the past with these student athletes dug into the novels, short stories, films, and poetry and made connections to their own lives in an inspiring way. I was their professor but became a fan of their efforts. After a long hiatus from baseball due to my lingering disgust with the steroid era, I was drawn back to the game by watching young men play for the love of it, by reading their essays that so often included the realization that one day, sooner than they would like, they would no longer be playing. The same was true for the softball, soccer, and track athletes. They knew that one day they would become just fans, as one of them said, no longer a participant. But I think they'll be better fans for what they have gone through in actually playing the game. I'm a Black Bear all the way, and my loyalty and appreciation of athletics has been enriched by the books and poems and stories we've learned through this segment. But I strive to be open-minded lover of sport as a whole. I hope the literature we discuss in this segment has, and will continue to reflect that, and that maybe we'll all become a little bit better at being a fan. It's Bruce Pratt from The Road saying see you in studio next week.